God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Hi, Paul. Welcome. Good to have you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or just new to the meeting? Hi, Mia. Welcome. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is from the foreword to the first edition of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple action. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please join me in welcoming our panel. We have Jim and Steve from the Into Action Group in Suffolk. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Jim?
All right. So I'm Jim and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
I think I'm going to start off by telling two stories that happened with my wife. So I had been going to AA for a while at that point, let's say about 6 months. And so there are good meetings and there's bad meetings, right? There are meetings where you take a lot out of it. There's some meetings where you don't take as much out of it. I came back from a great meeting and I was literally on the way back home. I'm driving. I'm like, okay, I can't wait to go tell my wife exactly what happened this meeting, what I learned. This is going to be awesome. So I get back home and I can tell she's not in a good mood. So I start talking to her and she immediately stops me and she goes, did you find someone at AA? And I was like, oh my gosh, like, why did you even think that? And it's because I was so happy and that it was not my usual MO coming out of AA. And prior to AA. So really what happened is, you know, AA was working in my life. So now I want to fast forward a few months after that, just for a little caveat. After I had been working the steps and I think, you know, internally, each of us struggles with the steps a lot more than people around us can see. So the people around us can see the steps working on our lives a lot quicker than we actually see it ourselves, because we're doing this internal struggle. And I came home one time and I'm talking to my wife and she goes, "You know, I've always loved you through all of this, but now I like you again. You're no longer an asshole," which is probably not true, but I appreciate the fact that, you know, my wife saw the change in me early on. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with that.
Thank you. My name is Steve Rocha, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
And I, as Amy said, I'm a member in good standing as of today of my home group, the Interaction Group. My sobriety day is November the 3rd, 1992. And I've been in Virginia almost the entire time I've been sober. I moved here when I was about 10 months sober. I came from the south side of Chicago. And probably the best thing that ever happened to me as far as getting sober was coming here. So I'm gonna share my experience with you and what my sponsor taught me. It's a little unorthodox, a little different, but it's just the way he taught me. And I was dying from untreated alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous at about 3.5 years sober. And I was completely freaking miserable. And I was I'm a sprinter. I'll do just enough to get by. And then that's enough, right? I'm a rest on my laurels kind of guy. And I don't want to do any more work that's necessary. So 3.5 years and I ain't making it. My life on the outside is getting better. It's on an upward trajectory, you know, because now I'm going to work every day and I got a decent job. And my wife and I were expecting our second child. And we just bought our first little house and we started this little construction company. So things are going well, but I'm completely miserable. So I call this guy. He laughs at me over the phone. He says, "Get your book and come on over." And so Bill takes me through this process of going through the steps, which was different than what I'd heard and seen anywhere else. And I remember sitting at his kitchen table and he's patting his big book. And he says, "Steve, 75% of people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't know how to do this." And I was blown away by that. I was like, "Really, Bill?" He's like, 75% of people don't know how to do this because we don't pay attention to what the book is asking us to do. So we went through the process and he taught me how to take a personal inventory, which is the biggest part. I think the most important part of learning to take a personal inventory is learning how to take a personal inventory, because I need to know what to do with the answers from the inventory. And as I move further on in the steps, I need to refer to that inventory in that same process all over again. But I am going to briefly touch on step 7 before we talk about step 8, because step 7, I think, and so what we did is, and so I've had 4 sponsors in the years that I've been sober, and each one of them has brought something different into my life. Like Bill gave me all the nuts and bolts and how to work the steps, right? But I still felt that spiritual component was missing. And then God put Buster in my life, and Buster helped me get over that hurdle with step 11. And then he put Bob Edwards in my life, and he helped me get over some other hurdles in my life. And now he's put this other guy, Ben, back in my life, and he's helping me with tremendously with the rest of it and how to carry the message, right? And so when we got to step 6, he said, "We're going to go into the 12 and 12, because in the big book, step 6 is one paragraph. Step 7 is just one paragraph, which is the 7-step prayer. And then 8 and 9 are kind of melded together. And it doesn't give us a whole lot of detail in any one of those steps. So when we get to step 6, we get into the 12 and 12. And in step 7, so step 6 talks about the defects of character that I learned to identify in my personal inventory. And this is a big deal, like, because I think when I was early bouncing in and out of AA, I've seen a lot of pamphlets and other stuff that people get all online that doesn't really correlate to what we're doing or what the big book is trying to, the direction the big book is trying to take us into. And so Bill taught me how to identify these defects of character. We use the 7 deadly sins, just like it does in the 12 and 12. And when I did my inventory with him, he made this little bar graph and described everything to me, and how when my characteristics get out of bounds with God's inside, it's when it becomes defective. So we all get the same amount of pride, anger, fear, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. But some of mine are to excess, right? Because as example, lust, I had it to an excess and pride. And so when I get to step 7, so I identify these characteristics that are defective in my life. Because if I don't learn how to do that, then what am I asking God to remove? So I was taught that I need to learn how to identify them and claim them as my own. And in step 7, it talks specifically in the 12 and 12 about building humility in my life. Because this is the part. So to move forward with the rest of it, specifically with 8 and 9, requires a tremendous amount of humility. I've been in meetings and I've heard other guys say that when they went to go make their amends, they said, "Here's your damn amend, take it or leave it." And that's not what my book said. My book don't say it like that, right?
So I've got to be able to come from a place of humility, and that is not a natural characteristic that I have. So these things that we talk about, humility, gratitude, joy, and love, and all this stuff, these are learned behaviors, and I think byproducts that I gained from going through the steps. By working the steps and trying to apply these principles in my life, that's how I gained some of this humility. I can't tell you that I have a lot or a lot of gratitude. I have a lot of gratitude, but I don't think I have a lot of humility. I just don't. And it's a work in progress. But here's one of the key statements that it makes. It says, for without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. Nearly all AAs have found too that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required just for sobriety, they still haven't much of a chance to become truly happy. And so if I want to be happy in life and in sobriety, that's one of the characteristics that I think I need to start trying to grow toward, right? Because it's not an objective. Gratitude isn't an objective. Humility is not an objective. It's just something that I gained by going through the process. And in step eight, as an example, what Amy read, what I like about the 12 and 12 is that step eight talks about the harm that I do to other people. Because it says I make a list of the person that I harm and I'm supposed to become willing to make amends. I'm not making amends yet. I just got to make a list and be willing. But what I like about the 12 and 12 is it identifies the different types of harm. I was a violent blackout drinker. I didn't start out that way, but that's the way it turned out. And I had a long string of strong arm robberies and stick ups and all that kind of stuff that I did because that's just the kind of guy that I turned into. My parents didn't raise me that way. Nobody, I didn't see it come. I did not see that in my future, right? When I was 20 years old. But sure enough, that's where my life took me. Because I, by nature, am a very lazy individual. Sloth was big in my inventory. So I would rather steal it from you than go work for it. That's just that was my mentality back then. And so I always thought the amends was just, you know, it was either physical or financial. But I find out there's spiritual amends, there's emotional amends, there's different type of amends that I need to learn how to look for and things that I need to make up for. And so by reading the eight step and the 12 and 12, it helps me the number one. And step seven is trying to look at humility, something I want to grow towards, and to think about the types of harm that I've done to people. Because, and I'll give you an example with my children. When, you know, my kids have never seen me take a drink. My daughter was 2 years old, and my son, he was born after I was sober. But yet, as an adult with my young children, I would give them what the 12 and 12 calls that silent scorn, right? When they get mad, I just wouldn't talk to them. They're my kids, but I was just a jerk still. So these things, this whole growing up and all that stuff, it took me a long time. You guys get it quick, man. I struggled mightily in early sobriety and how to get a handle on these things. Thank you.
All right. We are going to pick up again over on page 82. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing."
Okay. So I think for me, I have lots of defects, but being selfish and being prideful are my two biggest ones. And I always downplay what I have done to other people, and I will magnify whatever they have done to me. My oldest daughter at the time was 24. I was working on, I hadn't done my fourth step yet. That's another story. And she goes, "Hey, I want to get together and I want to talk about this, these things that are really bothering me." And she had broken off all contact for like 3 months. So this was, I was like, okay. And I don't know why. To this day, I don't know why that happened. And we met, and I should preface this by saying, I told my sponsor this was going to happen. And I said, what do you think? And he says, well, you shouldn't do it. I think this is a bad idea. And of course I did it anyways, because I have to learn through pain. So I sat down with my daughter, her boyfriend, and my wife, and it was one of the most awful experiences of my life. So I was prepared to hear all of the horrible things that I had done to my daughter. And I had mentally prepared myself for that. But I think, you know, two things were missing. One was I wasn't at that stage of my own humility where I could listen to this and be forgiving, as opposed to being resentful. And a lot of times I would hear something in it, and even inside, and I was literally expending 100% of my effort just not to show any emotion, because I was ready to explode. The other thing was that the timing wasn't right. So I was not prepared for this. The other two things that came as a surprise to me was when she starts off the conversation with resentments that came from my ex-wife, like that didn't involve my daughter at all. I was not prepared for that at all. Was not ready for that at all. And the second thing was items that she had heard that weren't true. She just hadn't heard the other side of the story. And all I wanted to do was like sit there and justify what she was telling me. So that was a absolutely horrible amends. And to this day, she still won't talk to me. I don't think it was because of that. I think there's something else going on that I don't know. But I realize now that if I had listened to my sponsor, maybe there'd be a point in time in the future where I could talk to her and I'd be in a place where I could listen to her and hear what she had to say, respond with forgiveness and humility. So anyways, she's still on my amends list. I would say that that whole timing piece of making amends, that judgment, that prudence, that really goes a long way when you go into the amends trying to understand that your first priority is to not add any more pain to the other person. Like, there should be a no amends where the person getting the most relief is you. It should be the other person coming away with as much as possible. If you also get relief, that's great. You know, that's fantastic. It's a great amends. You can cross it off your list. But that's not the point. The point is to make their burden lighter. Yeah, thanks.
So when I get to the ACE, I've been Jim touched it. The key word is forgiveness, right? And I, by my nature, am a hound dog of the worst kind. And I'd never been loyal or faithful to anybody in my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when my sponsor and his sponsor came to 12-step me this last time I got drunk, my drinking and my drug addiction were taken from me that very day. And I haven't had a drop or anything since that day. But the lying, the cheating, the stealing, the infidelity, that's all taking time to work on. One of my biggest character flaws is lying. And I'll stretch the truth of a story to make the story funnier, right? But it's still lying. And I'm cognizant of that today. So when the fish was this big, it was really this big, but I tell you know, my buddy Mike, when I went fishing one night and I fell off the boat, but it's funnier when I say he pushed me off the boat, right? So it's still lying though. And so I'm aware of these things today, whereas before I was never cognizant of these things. And so the infidelity, I was probably whoring around still until I was about 4 months sober. And I was ready to drink again. And I called a buddy of mine that I worked with that was in the program. And he told me what to do. And he said, you need to go to Rosemont to get a sponsor. I was living in Chicago still. It was like from here to Gloucester. And I was like, man, it seems kind of excessive, don't you think? Just to get a sponsor. I had a sponsor, but he's really just a name only. And anyway, so I did what he told me to do. And I did an inventory and a fifth step with the guy, and I didn't get quite what I got as I did with my initial sponsor when I made a list of all the bad things I'd done. I read it to him in his car. However, because I'm the sprinter, I do just enough to get by. And so I moved to Virginia, and I get to Bill, and we get to this part. And so he says, almost all the names of individuals that are on your four-step inventory. This is why he says, this is why we're going to take it in the backyard and burn it, because we still need to refer to that list. That's still the foundation of the rest of what we're going to do. So he says, most of those names on your inventory, your grudge list, are going to end up on your amends list, on the eight-step list. And he says, and you need to figure out, so the people that are on the grudge list and sexual relations list, and if there's, I didn't have any individuals on my fears list. So those people need to be on the eight-step list. And so by doing this, it helps me to start, because what Bill is teaching me, what the book is teaching me, is how to take an objective look at my life and who and what I really am. So I put my wife, we weren't married, we didn't get married till after we moved. Actually, we got married a week before we moved to Virginia. So I was 10 months sober when we got married. And I put it through hell. We had a newborn. My daughter was 2 years old when I got sober. So I drugged him through the mud those last 2 years. I just drug him through the mud before I finally got sober, because I bounced in and out of AA more out than in. And my wife and I have talked about this on a number of occasions over the years. And we use the term that the book says, that I was wild back then. But I'm very extremely grateful that my wife has never asked me with who, when, where, none of that. She doesn't want to know. And I'm grateful. And our literature is very clear in this, that I can't go in an effort to make myself feel better by making these amends and throw somebody else into the fire. I'm in the fire. That doesn't mean I got to put anybody else in the fire. So I can't lighten my load by putting the burden on somebody else by identifying another woman that I had relations with. And so by going through this process and growing up in sobriety, Travis and I were talking before the meeting started. I was 30 years old when I got sober. And so I learned how to be a husband. I learned how to be a father. I learned how to be a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. These are not qualities that I walked in here with. Most of you already come with that stuff. I didn't have any of that, man. I was just a childish, insecure individual. I was a broken man when I got here. And thanks to what you guys taught me, I don't live like that anymore. So that infidelity isn't part of my life anymore. But I still need to talk about that, because in my life, so because we in step seven is talking about the shortcomings, right? And I remember asking my sponsor, well, what's the difference between a defect of character and a shortcoming? And he says, the shortcoming is, think of it like when you go to start a fire, it's the kindling that gets the fire started, right? It's those little twigs and branches that you light first. So in my case, it comes down to sex, shopping, gambling, and eating. When I do any one of those four things to excess, that's just my alcoholism knocking on the door. Say, come on, man, let's go for a ride. Because then I want to overindulge. When I overindulge, and this is just, I'm just speaking for myself. It's probably different for everybody else, but I would say most guys are probably about the same. So when I find myself wanting or desiring to do more of it in excess of those four things, primarily, that's when I'm getting off the beam. And that's when I got to refocus what I'm supposed to be doing, because I've lost focus of what I'm supposed to be doing at that point. And so by coming in here, I remember the first time I made amends to my wife, it was pretty weak, to be honest with you. And then we went out years later, and I made a formal amends to her. I think it was about 8 or 9 years sober at the time. And it was perfect. And I'll tell you guys when we get to step nine, but it was perfect. It came up because I'm very grateful. I've had almost all good experiences in making amends and making this list and people who I've harmed. Because once we identify the harm, then I need to know who gets on the list. Thank you.
Yeah, I've just realized we're reading the wrong stuff.
Nine, 13.
Yeah, we're on 8 and 9, part one. Didn't we do 5, 6, and 7 last week?
Yes.
We'll have to go back.
Well, I don't know what to say. We'll keep
Just
going on
gonna
what
roll
we're
with it.
doing. Yep. Okay. We are now on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk to them incessantly about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
That's pretty good. So I'm going to start with step four. So my sponsor told me to take everybody from step four. You drop it onto your step eight list. There's two things I wanted to point out because I kind of struggled with them. And I'll just be the first to say that if there's anybody that has done the step slower, I'd be surprised. I will drag my feet every step of the way. So it's taken me a long time. But I will say this. There were a couple items in my step four list that I wasn't sure what to do. One of them was... only because this comes down to amends later on, is my father divorced my mother when I was two, and I grew up with a strong sense of abandonment. And I think as a child, I didn't have any fault in that. However, as an adult, my reaction to that, my resentment to that abandonment is something that I owned. And my father had his own demons that he was working with. So I need to place him on my step eight list, even though he's passed away, because I need to make amends to him, which I haven't done yet. The other piece that I thought was important was the people that I have harmed that I didn't have any resentments against, which is very few. I mean, almost everybody that I've harmed, I've figured out something, some way that they've harmed me. I was really good at that. But my youngest daughter, really, she had no control over any of this. My alcoholism was harmful to her. She had no impact at all on this. So she was somebody that I added to my step eight list. So once I got those people on my step eight list, I was to create a list of four columns. Like, those are the people that I'm willing to make amends to. Those are the people that I can't and I won't make amends to, and Steve's going to help me with the fourth one. So for me, I don't know why this was, but it took me forever to make that first amends. It was, this is so weird. The best man at my first wedding, I grew up in New York, happened to move down to Virginia Beach. So he's in Virginia Beach. We haven't talked in 15 years because we had a dinner, my ex-wife, his wife, and I got drunk and I was getting into an argument with him because I like being right. And doesn't turn out well often. So he was here and I was just dreading going to talk to him because I was like, oh, that I remember that dinner. It was so awful. Like, I mean, I was just prideful and snobbish and talked down to him and in front of his wife. So I finally get in contact with him. And I'm like, hey, can we go out to dinner? And I just want to talk to you. He's like, sure. And we go out to dinner and I'm like, hey, I'm in AA. And part of this process is I need to make amends to people that I've harmed. And I laid out the things that I had done to him, especially pointing out that dinner where, you know, I made him feel lesser in front of his wife. And I'm just dreading this. And at the end, he's just listening, he's listening, he's listening. And at the end, I'm like, you know, did I miss anything? And he's like, no, you pretty much covered it. And I said, you know, how can I make this right? You know, I've done this to you. And he said, I'm not sure I remember that dinner. Which I was like, you got to be kidding me. I just spent a year agonizing over this amends and you don't remember it? It was horrible. Then I'm trying to convince him how horrible it was. And then he looks at me and he's like, oh yeah, I seem to remember you just wanting to be right. And I'm like, that was probably what it was. So at the end, and I asked him, you know, what can we do to make this right? He's like, hey man, why don't we just keep on meeting up once every month or something like that? I'm like, How fantastic a result of an amends is that? I have this friend that I grew up with, was the best man at my wedding, that I haven't talked to in at least 10 years. And now we've already met up twice. And I'm looking forward to meeting up with him again. I mean, it was just a great, that was an amends that just went well beyond what I thought was possible. And just reinforced the idea that I probably should have been starting on this, you know, somewhere earlier in that year, rather than waiting for that first amends.
Okay, so it says here in step 8, while the purpose of making restitution to others is paramount, it's equally necessary that we extricate from an examination of our personal issues every bit of information about ourselves and our fundamental difficulties that we can, since defective relations with other human beings is been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism. So my problem is I don't know how to make right relationships with other people. I just don't. I don't know how to be a friend among friends or worker among workers. I don't know how to do that. I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We were talking the other day that, you know, I learned here that if I want to have a good friend, I need to be a good friend. And I never knew that. I always thought a good friend was just people that do things for me or give me stuff when they need it, right? Then you're a great friend. Colby's my best friend because he always loans me money when I need it, right? But when he needs something, I'm nowhere to be found. So that's not the sign of a good friend. So I learned that here. And we call it the instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, emotional, spiritual damage to people. If our tempers are consistently bad, we arouse anger in others. If we lie or cheat, we deprive others not only of their worldly goods, but their emotional security and peace of mind. If our sex conduct is selfish, we may excite jealousy, misery, and strong desire to retaliate in kind. And so, as I look back over the course of my life, and I'm going to tell you in regards to my wife, thanks to you guys and the way you got me, how you taught me how to behave at home, how to treat my wife, how to be a father, how to treat my kids, all that good stuff, is that we don't have a house phone anymore, right? This is crazy, but we don't have a house phone. We only got cell phones now. But when the woman would call my house, my wife would say, "Hey, it's Julie or Sandy or whoever, it's for you." And that was it. There's no, "Well, who is that? Why is she calling you?" None of that stuff. Because you guys have taught me that if I live like a husband is supposed to be living, I don't have to worry about those things anymore. And I am so grateful that my wife and I have such a strong level of communication that we can talk about just about anything. There's some things from my past I don't tell her all the bad stuff that I did, right? Just she knows vaguely that I robbed some stuff, but I don't tell her I did strong arm robberies and I hit you with a baseball bat and rifle through your pockets kind of deal. She doesn't know that part, right? So because of that, she doesn't worry whenever I go out, what time, if I come back at 1 o'clock in the morning because I'm hanging out with the guys or I went to a Super Bowl party or went to go play cards or this or that, what? There's no concern on her anymore because I proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm living the way I'm supposed to be living. As I try to practice these principles in all of my affairs at home, and I try to practice the AA way of life at home. This is why I think it's so important. And I don't know how relevant this is to what we're talking about. But I think this is a critical for my growth. And just for the record, I want everybody to know, I wore my least squeaky shoes today. I make sure I clean the bottle, sanded them down. There'll be no issues with me moving my feet. You were here last week. But I think it's crucial, critical for my spiritual growth that you come to my home and eat with us. So whenever we have an event, I always invite you guys because I think it's important for you to see how I live, how I really live my life, right? How I treat my wife and my kids and my grandkids and how I interact with other people. To me, that's critical because I sponsored this young man one time and he's no longer with us. He's still around, but he's no longer with us. But he came to me and asked me for some help. And I said, "Yeah, come on, meet me at my house. We'll go to a meeting in Suffolk or someplace, whatever." And he gets to my house. I said, "Come on in, man." He said, "Really?" He said, my last sponsor would never let me in his house. He always made me wait outside." It's like, I don't get that. I don't get that. Because my wife is one of the people, she embraced what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. My wife helped a lot of guys get sober at our kitchen table. There's a lot of new guys that would just show up at our house randomly, knocking on the door. "Hey, Steve, you got a minute?" And as soon as they come in, my wife gets into the kitchen, right? Starts eating up some leftovers. "Have a seat. Come on, you're hungry." Boom, boom, boom. And next you know, it's 4 hours later. So I'm grateful that my wife was one of the people that embraced this way of life to help me help you. And as a direct result, I get to stay sober and we get to have the life that we have. Not everybody gets that level, right? But I'm truly grateful that my wife saw what I was doing in AA and embraced that and encouraged me to do more. And it was tough in the beginning. Early sobriety is difficult, especially with young families. Our kids were little, because being sober and active in Alcoholics Anonymous requires a lot of time away from home. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of times I drop my son off at baseball practice, give him the wave, or we do this, and that means I got to go. I'm going to a meeting. So he'd be in the outfield and he'd hold his glove up, acknowledging that, all right, Dad, I'll see you later. That was it. We had signals for everything. You know, I participated as much as I could with all my kids' activities, but I still couldn't forget what I was doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Still, so again, one of the conversations we were having is the priority that so I built my life around Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't build Alcoholics Anonymous around my life. It doesn't work that way for me. AA has to be the center of my life. If I want the full benefits, if I want all the good stuff that these books talk about that I can have, that's the way I have to live my life. I've got to build it around AA, not the other way around. AA can't come second. And it's hard to have that kind of conversation when we're new in sobriety with wives or husbands. Like, oh, AA's got to be the most important thing in my life. Man, she's gonna hit me with a frying pan if I say something like that. But just because I don't tell her that doesn't mean I'm not living that way. My wife and I, she understands it today, because we'll lose everything we got if I start drinking again. So my wife understands crystal clear, and has for decades now, that AA has to be the most important thing in my life. And his spiritual growth, and his coming to meetings, and sponsoring guys, and going out and doing fifths, and doing all the work that we do, right? Requires time away from home. It's a big deal. Thank you.
All right. We are still on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Jim?
So my first marriage was 20 years. It ended, we'll just say, poorly. The best thing I could say about it is that my ex-wife deserved the better version of myself, of me, at the end of our marriage. But after I had gotten into AA, I realized as part of my step four that I have to start working on forgiving her for the resentments that I had for her. And it took me like 9 months of every day I would, as part of my daily spiritual practice, I'd be like, I forgive her with her name. And I'm like, God, help me forgive her with her name. And I didn't believe it for like 3 months. I'm like, I'm just saying this. I don't think I can get to the point where I can forgive her for what she had done to me. But the weird thing about AA is that it works. So you start walking the steps, and all of a sudden I realized, like, at 6 months, I wasn't super aggressive every time she would text me, and I wouldn't be like on the warpath. And then in 9 months, I was like, you know, I'm okay. And now I'm at the point where I really hope that she has a great life. I really hope that she finds what she's looking for, and that she is better than she's ever been. So that forgiveness right there is the first step for me on my amends list for her. I still haven't made amends to her. I don't think the timing is right. I think I have some more humility I have to go through, some more humbleness, but that is the first step. The other thing I'd like to say is that I've gotten to the point where when I get into a fight with my wife, and if it's one of those ones where, like, you go to your separate corners and you're just both stewing over something, it's mostly her fault, and I'll be there, and it doesn't take me long. It takes me less time now. I'll get to the point where I'm like, oh boy, if I let this go on anymore, I'm going to have to put this on my step four list, and I'm going to have to tell my sponsor. And I'm like, oh, okay, I don't want to do that. That just makes things take even longer. So then I'll be the first one. And I'm like, to go to her and, say I messed up, ask for forgiveness and work through it. And to this day, if I'm the first one to go and apologize and ask for forgiveness, that whole conversation goes better than the previous method, which was I'm waiting for you to come to me and apologize, which that was just an emotional game of chicken to see whoever could last longest before somebody gave in. Thanks.
So when I get to the ninth step, Bill broke this down for me. He said, here's the four columns that Jim was talking about. There will be those who ought to be dealt with just as soon as we become reasonably confident we can maintain our sobriety. There will be those to whom we can only make partial restitution. Let's complete disclosure, do them or others more harm than good. There will be other cases where action ought to be deferred, and still others which may be the very nature of the situation, we should never be able to make direct personal contact at all. So so if I don't have a sponsor guiding me, telling me how to do this, so I got this just a list of names, and now I got to put them in each of the four one in each of the four categories. And Bill gave me the spiel, right? This little pitch that I was supposed to give when I go make face-to-face amends. And something to the effect that, I've been sober for so-and-so such a long, days, months, years, whatever it's been. I can't stay sober if I don't go through this process. And I'm here to try to right the wrong that I did to you. And he said, if you owe him money, you take an envelope of money, either all of it or part of it. And if it's only part of it, you got to make a promise to pay and pay on time. When I tell him I'm gonna make amends to this, and then I'm supposed to ask, is there anything I left out? Because I'm a blackout drinker. I don't remember what I did half the time, right? And then the last question is there anything, what else can I do to make this right? So I always thought the amends were just financial, right? And so I've learned that we have the financial amends, we have the spiritual amends, we have the living amends, which is what I do with my family, most of my kids, most of them. And my grandkids, even though I don't owe them really any amends, but I'm trying to be a better grandfather to my grandchildren. And so one of the things that Bill and I talked about, he says, well, so if you go to make amends to the guy and the guy won't take your money, he says, number one, you don't get to keep the money. He said, number two, so you have to do something else with the money. You got to give the money either to AA or some other entity. And in case you don't know, Ronald McDonald House takes anonymous donations online. All right. So if you ever need to send money somewhere to make an amend, you can send it to Ronald McDonald House. You can make an anonymous donation. I've done several of them. It just helps because I can't take credit for it. I can't get a letter of recognition for sending somebody some money because that defeats the purpose, right, of making the amend. And so I got this list. And so in regards to my wife. So I go to make a formal amends to my wife. I make dinner reservations at our favorite restaurant at the oceanfront. And we go and I said, honey, you know what? I want to make amends to you. She said, oh, good. I've been waiting for this. So my wife and kids, they've been to enough AA meetings. They've been to plenty of eating meetings. My son first took his first dip of chewing tobacco at the Suffolk discussion meeting 20 years ago, whatever it was, right? And so they've been to enough meetings. They know the spiel. They've heard enough speakers over the years. She's like, oh, I was waiting for this. So I give her the spiel, right? I give her the spiel. I go through the whole thing. And she says, all right, this is what I want. She had four things. She says, she was crystal clear. She says, I want you to treat our kids better. She said, I want you to replace all my jewelry that you stole from me when you're drinking and doing drugs. She says, I want you to buy me a new SUV and I want you to build me a new house. And then we're square. So I've done three out of the four. I haven't built the new house. We were this close this past summer, but we couldn't sell our house to buy the new house. But anyways, so that's still on the list. But this is the benefit of bringing my family to these eating meetings and anniversary meetings is because it prepares them for, and they give it a different perspective rather than just my AA pitch, if you will. They can hear how other people are getting sober and living their lives. And so most of the amends that I've made in sobriety have turned out really well, almost all of them. The only bad amends that I've had have been with other AA members. It just went south because most AA members don't know how to take an amend. We just don't. And it's sad, but it's true. And this is for simple stuff. So what we just read about the mumbling of an apology. So I rarely say I'm sorry anymore, right? Because that was one of my key words back when I was drinking. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're a sorry SOB, that kind of thing. And so now the only time I ever say I'm sorry is like if I bump into you at the Walmart with my shopping cart. Because I don't, now either I give you an apology or I give you an amend. That's it. There's no more, hey, I'm sorry for what I did. No. If I'm trying to right the wrong that I did, then you either get an apology or you get a formal amend. It's one or the other. Sorry is just when I bump into you at the shopping center kind of deal. And so my mother was the most troublesome person in my life for decades and decades and decades. I've made amends to my mother many times. I think at least 4 times right now. And I prayed for her and I did this and I did that and I've done a bunch of stuff and financials and you name it. And I was talking to my sponsor about it one time and because I have a hard time. I was really struggling with this. She was always like the number one on my inventory, my first 3 or 4 inventories. And my sponsor said to me, Steve, do you wish to be forgiven for what you've done to everybody else? I said, yes, of course, man. That's ultimately what I'd like to be. He says, if you wish to be forgiven, you got to be willing to forgive. And it's one of the things I wasn't willing to do with my mother was to forgive her for what she did as to us as kids growing up. And I was able to turn the corner with that, with some extra prayer and some more inventory work to where I now it's turned out to such a degree. A couple of years ago, my wife and I, we celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary. And I invited her, my sisters, and my brother. My brother couldn't come because there's a restraining order with the sisters, you know, that kind of thing. That's my family, right? He couldn't come because there's a restraining order. Plus, he had just gotten out of the hospital for trying to commit suicide. So he wasn't ready to travel yet. So they come and I tell my mom, they all know I'm in AA, right? They all know I've already talked to them about this extensively. And I tell them, remind everybody there's no drink, no drugs in the house because they're all on the medical marijuana bandwagon, right? They think it's the coolest thing in the world because they all got the cards and all that jazz. And they're in a government program that they ain't a part of or on the dole with. And that's just the way they live. You know, I'm so grateful because Bill taught me early on that I had to be fully self-supporting through my own contributions. So he says, you don't get to rely on the government for anything else. You need to get out and start working. So that's how my life got better, right? Because I started going to work every day. So we invite them, and the night before we're gonna have the anniversary thing, I come home from a meeting, and my wife's mad. She's sitting in the den. She's mad. I said, "What's wrong, honey?" She says, "Can't you smell it?" It's like, "No, I can't smell it. What am I smelling?" They're smoking pot in the house. It's like, "You gotta be kidding me!" And I walked in the kitchen. I could smell it clear as day. And I went upstairs, and I said, "I told you guys not to be doing that stuff in my house. You know that we don't live like that around here. Blah blah blah." You guys need to get your stuff and just get out. Just go. I don't want you here no more. And my mother comes, "Ah, this is my fault. It was me. I was smoking out in the backyard. I was smoking in the backyard, but I blew the smoke out in the house." It's like, really? Really? So anyways, they stayed the night. But so we go to have this we're having the party, the reception afterwards. And Mike's daughter comes over and she's saying, "Yeah, somebody was complaining, but there's some people outside smoking pot." And they said, "Who was it?" "Oh, Steve's mom and his sisters." And before they left, they emptied their smoking utensils or whatever leftovers there, shaking the bag. They dumped it all in the bathroom sink and left it there for my wife to clean up. And so, because of what you guys taught me, I've learned to love them enough to leave them alone. And I haven't spoken to my mother since that day, since they left. That was 2.5 years ago. And that's just the way it has to be. I'm not looking to change them, right? This is part of my problem is we talk about love and tolerance and acceptance, blah, blah, blah. But why do I always want to change people to suit me? So acceptance is me acknowledging that they're not going to change to suit me. They're just going to be what they are. And my choice is to be a part of it or leave them alone. And I'm grateful you guys taught me that I can love them enough to just leave them alone. I don't have to have that in my life anymore. I'm at a point in my life where I want less conflict and less chaos. I'm not trying to bring any more into it. So this is why we have to be measured on the relationships that we form in sobriety, right? And our family members and who we're letting back into the house. I've got to be real cautious. I mean, when I was early in sobriety, I'd let anybody come over to my house. Now, not so much anymore. I'm much more cautious on who I let into my life. I think it's important that you guys come to my house, but I'm measured on who I invite to my house. Not as much, not like I used to be. So and getting back to the amends, so there's amends that I can make now, amends that I have to make, the weight, amends that I can't make, and amends. This is the key category to me. The key column is the amends that I won't make. And there were two guys that I worked with that were on the list. And do I got time still, Amy?
Oh, yeah, we're good. What time is it?
It's 7:50.
7:50.
All right,
We
I'll
just
make this
got the
quick.
promises.
I'll make this quick. So we worked together, and we're a three-man team. They were two reefer heads, like Beavis and Butthead, and they don't know that I'm sober, but one day I break my anonymity to them. And now I become the butt of all the jokes. And now we're ready to fist fight every chance we get. And luckily we didn't. But I just despise these two guys. And we were the most productive. We did the work of five men as three. That's how good we worked together. But because I made the decision to break my anonymity, it spoiled all of that, right? And so these guys were on my list. And one of the guys, this was years later now, I'm driving down 64 and I recognize his truck and I see him broke on the side of the highway. Landed on the brakes, pulled over, and I walked over to him. I said, "Man, you need any help?" He's like, "No, I just called somebody on the way, but thanks." And I turned around and walked away, and that was it. That was it. That was me showing the willingness that I'm willing to help this guy if he needs help. I don't want to help him go grocery shopping if he calls me, he needs, somebody to help move furniture. That's not the kind of help I'm trying to offer you. And that's the growth that he gave me, right? So I'm grateful to say I don't have anybody in that last category today. If there's anybody I've caused harm to, and I'm not done with my men's list, there's still some names on there. And luckily, I got that guy Jake over there who reminds me about amends that I still need to make. This is why it's so important that we talk outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we fellowship outside of AA, because when we're telling all the old war stories, Jake is really good about this. I'll tell a story, it's kind of funny, blah, blah, blah. And he'll say, "Yeah, but you made amends for that, right?" Yeah, let me think. No, I don't think I have. He's called me twice on that already. Twice. He's called me and I had to go make the amends. But this is why it's so important that we fellowship outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just here. Thank you.
All right, we're going to finish on page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Jim.
So my oldest son came back from college and I made amends to him on Friday. And we were talking, and one of the things that I struggled with when it talks about harm is I think financial harm makes a lot of sense. I think physical harm makes a lot of sense. Emotional harm I get, but there's another category of spiritual harm, and I didn't really understand what that meant. Now, here's what I think it means for me is that it's when, specifically for me, I was very angry. I actually went to therapy and the therapist really helped me out. So there are things outside of AA that can help as well. But when I was making my amends to my son, I told him that I said, I think a lot of times I was very quick to anger and that, and he was like, "Yeah, that really changed the way I responded to people." And on the outside, if you look at him, you'd think he's a fantastic kid. Like he is always the first person to do the right thing. Like I have four kids, he's the one that's going to do the right thing, whatever the circumstances. And when we're going through that, that it was really hard to hear that I had such an impact on his personality that he was, really afraid for a large part of his life. And then when we got to the point where I was like, "What can I do to make this right?" He's like, "I just want to talk to you." I'm like, "Okay." And then he starts to talk to me about a struggle that he's having with marijuana. And I was like, one, I was grateful that he was talking to me. That's a breakthrough. But then two, I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I actually have some experience with addiction. I think I can help you with this. And we talked for like 3.5 hours. So for me, and then among the many, many things that AA has given me, besides my life, it has given me my children back, and I appreciate that. Thanks.
Good job, Steve.
Two quick points about the promises. My sponsor told me early on that if I take them, cut it off of here, tape it to a bottle of tequila, they'll come through drinking the tequila just as well as working the steps. It's actually, it's kind of true. I think it's almost disingenuous at times when we read this at meetings and we don't explain to newcomers that this doesn't happen right away. I think the promises are coming true when I get on that pink cloud in the beginning. And because I'm not drinking, I'm not doing any drugs, my life turned around, I got a little change in my pocket, and I feel so good. I think it's the promises. And really, the promises don't really start to come true until I get halfway through with my amends list. My list was pretty long. I had a lot of societal amends that I had to make. So all these robberies, all these stick-ups that I did, I don't know who I robbed. So now I have to make amends to society for that. And there's a lot of things that I did over the years to try to right that wrong, make those societal amends. And the promises, I had my spiritual awakening when I was about 10 years sober. And it is only because of the work that I did and the guidance that I got from my sponsor throughout the process. Because I probably wouldn't have made it. I would have probably gave up. Because like the book says, I like to rest on my laurels. I want to do just enough to get by. So most of us will do the first couple of amends and we do it with our family. We always recommend do it with family members. Do the easy ones first so we get a little momentum, right? Get a little air under our wings, if you will. And my problem is I start feeling so good about doing the first couple of them, I don't want to do any more. Especially the financial ones. I don't want to do those. I'll shortcut those. I'll minimize the number as much as possible. My sponsor said, add it all up and then double the numbers. Like, are you kidding me? It's a lot of freaking money. And it is what it is, right? And so will I ever be done with the societal demands? Probably not. There's a lot of people I hurt. I don't remember everything that I did. And so the other part is that if I continue to do the work, the pink cloud and the promises, I could have that every day if I want. If I want to work hard enough and diligently enough and be disciplined enough to practice this in my life every day, I could have the promises in the pink cloud all day, every day. My problem is I'm lazy and I don't want to work that hard. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare award about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Can I make one?
Oh, pardon me. Yes.
Our very own Mike W. It's not this month. It's the end of the next month. End of January, we celebrated 3 years of continued sobriety at the Interaction Group. Who would have thunk it, right? And but yet he's here.
Wow.
I'm grateful. We're going to announce the speaker. There'll be cake, coffee, and pony rides for the kids.
Right on.
Oh yeah.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
Hey, Jake.
So my home group is the Interaction Group. Yeah, we meet out in Suffolk at Blue Episcopal Church. Yeah, every Friday we are speaker meeting. Tuesday for book study. This Friday, next week, this week, we will have Ethan, who's going to be speaking out of the three doors down King's Grant Presbyterian Church.
Okay. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available on the table to my right. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a big book. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me about this. If you're shy, you can send us an email at info@simpleactions.net and we will get back to you. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella, just up Colonial Avenue. In closing, can we please thank Jim and Steve again for joining us? Thanks to all who participated, setting up the room, making the coffee, making it all happen. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up front and thank these guys personally. Has somebody volunteered to read the last two? Oh, Travis has. Okay, good.
Hi, everyone. My name is Travis, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Travis.
A Vision for You, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come when your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. Thanks. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you till then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing. All right, our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.